food. So what did you have for lunch?
I ordered a jackfruit burrito bowl.
You might regret it in an hour or so.
Well, I already regretted it because the delivery guy brought it and everything was already spilled in the bag. Like, it wasn't a great lunch in Israel.
Hey guys, this is Noura and you're listening to The Dikkat Show.
You'll check it out. A whole new generation of young people today who belong nowhere.
But I prefer to be now cast.
Third culture kids where the concept of the Dikkat is the corner shop or the top shop.
We are live outside. Hey yo, what's up people?
What up nation?
It's a revolution of expression.
You tuned in to The Dikkat Show, stay tuned in.
Arab digital generation is shaping our identity, their creative expression and their future. So please give a very warm welcome.
The Dikkat.
Welcome to your tribe.
What up, fam? Against all odds, we have made it to our 200th episode. Our first episode went live on January 2016, and for the past 5 years from the UAE, we've shared our lives with you, our triumphs, our failures, and our many, many successes and adventures. So from the bottom of my heart, I want to take a moment to thank every one of you for listening, for showing up to our installations, for being a part of our lives, and for being our sounding board as we've tackled some of the most challenging questions, and just the funny stuff as well. It's been a wild ride. And with all that said, I would like to welcome Your Excellency. Welcome to the Dikkat Show. It is such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be with you guys.
Thank you. So one of the things that I always wonder, and I know some of our listeners are wondering about, is we want to know what your childhood was like, because the UAE has been our home for, you know, at least my home for the last 15 years. But I don't know what it was like growing up as a young girl, where your dreams are and how that shaped your worldview. Can you just let me know what was that like?
Sure. So I don't know, when someone grows older, the memories become vivid the more you grow. And I don't know, during COVID, I've been remembering, many kind of an old, beautiful, sweet memories. So I grew up my whole life here in the UAE, in Abu Dhabi. I studied my whole life as well in the UAE, except for a year, I can mention later. So growing up in the mid-80s, it was such a fun time. And the 80s kids, of course, we do have our own kind of hits that we sing along with. We arcade games. Even growing up, I mean, we're a family of four girls and two boys. Both of my parents been working and still working, bless them. So growing up with looking at my mom going to school, she used to be a principal, my father in the army, us just having fun as kids, going to school. So I started in a private school, and all of a sudden I saw myself in a public school where my mother is the principal. But there was no wasta whatsoever. She was very strict. I mean, my mom in school is the different creature at home. Doesn't mean that she was less strict, but how they are. And when I asked her, Mama, why did you just all of a sudden take me out of the private school? She said, I wanted to make sure that your Arabic was your first language. I wanted you to excel in Arabic. So that was her reason, and I think I thank her for this reason. Growing up, I mean, we as girls were the eldest in the family, yet we've been playing outdoors, enjoying BMX bicycle rides. I remember I can't forget the day I bought Frogger, which is an arcade game in the mid-80s. And that was that was my window to the beauty of games and arcade and computer and whatsoever and information. I studied 1 year in the U.S. That was an eye-opener. It was in the mid-90s. All of a sudden, you see yourself in a total different environment, total different culture. We understand that culture is a different bubble, yet had many friends. And I think this is where journeys or certain spots in your life are kind of the tipping point that defines you as a person. So that for me was one of them. came back, studied management information system, so IT, and graduated from your university. While they're laughing, I don't know. I think they're laughing because of my major. It's a funny major.
No, it's I'm laughing because I actually applied for that as well. Yeah. So back in the day, I was supposed to be an I was looking to study aerospace engineering, and I was accepted in the following semester, but I just wanted to start college. So I ended up applying locally here at AUD for MIS. And a semester later, the major was taken out. And I didn't know. So for another two semesters, I was undeclared without knowing that I was undeclared because the major ceased to exist anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't exist. Well, Omar, I asked, I was in a visit to AU. And I was like, where is this major? The major is obsolete. There's no major, but it's an essential now. I think it's an essential skill to have in the business college or computer science.
I took an MIS course, I think, in university too. Yeah, it was a course.
Yeah, I think from a major to a course. I don't know how that sounds, but this is the rapid evolution of education and skill set, I guess.
So MIS, we're back to the UAE, coming from the US as well. How did your career kick off, and how did you get to where you are today?
Well, it has been, alhamdulillah, a good journey so far. I started my life in terms of work career, and there are three stages. The first one was in the IT major. And then the second one was more in human capital training and development. And after 6 years from my first and second job, there was much of a call of diversity in economy in Abu Dhabi specifically. And there was the discussion of creating a media hub, creating 2454. And I was part of that discussion because, I was connected to my previous job, to this project. And what helped is I felt, I've been always a huge fan of TV, reading, animation, games. And there was just simple question is where content is created. What does content creation, do to an environment, to a city, to a country? We just started remembering when we were growing up, the animation that we used to watch on TV, the Sesame Street Arabic version, the drama. I mean, we were good in drama. We were, in the 80s, and we were excellent in drama. I don't know later on what happened, with all due respect, but I think we were up to date till we got outdated. And there are many reasons, and I think we can have another call or another podcast. But that simple question that took us to culture and creativity, and then later on, I was responsible of business setup. And then later on, I became the CEO. And then at the same year, I was appointed to be at the Federal National Council. And that by itself, being in the creative scene and all of a sudden a member of the parliament or the Federal National Council, for me, it was kind of a surprise, but I was privileged with the trust. Yet policymaking is helping me in terms of what I do now, because FNC is all about policymaking. Then appointed in 2016 to be a minister of the Federal National Council for a year or so. And in 2017, luckily, it was back to my passion and culture and being the minister of culture. So therefore, I think it did help in terms of getting me back to where Noura is. I'm not going to say my comfort zone, but I'm going to say where I fit the most, and I feel that I can give much better in terms of a responsibility or a duty. So that kind of snapshot of my career so far started in 2003 till today.
That's amazing. And, talking about this year, and we've been, and throughout the shows before, and we do a lot of gratitude episodes about the years, about the year that we've had and the years to come. And this year has been filled with a lot of highs and lows. And when times are tough, we make it a point to seek good news. Can you tell us what we can all celebrate this year?
Yeah, it's the word celebration. I mean, it's And such time as this is a word that we really we're hungry for celebration. And I think when you say the word, you imagine us being in one room together, laughing, eating a meal together. And I think we're kind of in a different time yet. That, you know, keeping the momentum of continuity in the UAE, not stopping in the UAE, I think we should celebrate our resilience and adaptability. You know, we adapted, you know, we're being also this year, I think, very optimistic. Some people are planning their summer holidays, what they're going to do in the fall. And, you know, looking at 2020, there was an impact, direct impact, if we will look at specifically the cultural scene, you know, the sphere of culture, the venues, the museums, the events that we were celebrating that I just mentioned, the music shows or the theater, just, you know, paused. And I think that by itself was not a pleasant pause. Yet I hope it helped us rediscover ourselves, and I hope it, you don't know how most of the people are feeling. You know, we tend to run a survey or see the aftermath of things. Yet the moment things were lifted, you see people just going back to the office and, you know, going back to, you know, to be part of the community and guarantee their livelihood. I think I would say that, you know, we have, if I'll celebrate something in the UAE, I'll celebrate the solidarity that we saw of the people of the UAE from all nationalities, from different backgrounds, even in the creative and cultural scene. There are communities supporting one another, and not just institutions. Everyone was responsible, and I think, I think as an Emirati, I grew up with individuals who are not all locals and Emiratis. You know, I can never imagine my life only in a country with just Emiratis. I can't, because this is not the way I grew up, or this is not the way I see the founding father even drawing on sand with just Emiratis. I see him with also individuals from different countries who are with us. So I think that solidarity, that sense of we're all in this together and we're all one, specifically in the language of leadership, individuals of the UAE, I think this is something we should celebrate. And I think this is something that will mark a beautiful chapter of our jubilee in the UAE.
No, 100%. That was beautifully said. And it's also like to us, like I've been here like all my life. Anna, by the way, Mawlid Abu Dhabi. Like as soon as you said the arcades in Abu Dhabi in the 80s, 90s, I knew you've been to Action Zone. So
Action Zone, Hamad Center, Hamdan Center.
So even with us, solidarity is it's a beautiful way to put it, because even when everything started, we were thinking of more ways of how can we even build our roots even stronger throughout everything that's happening. So when everything opens up again, we're here to stay. And that was very important in our thinking path when everything started, whether if it was the lockdown and the working from home, and then when everything opened up 2 years, people went back to work, people went back to their more normal lives, people went to Zanzibar.
Yeah.
that was a trending topic. But
were you wearing your masks in Zanzibar?
I've been traveling like a year and a half.
we haven't left. We've been resilient here. But I do think this is the one thing is we actually, when everything happened with us as a team, we sat down and we pledged allegiance again to be part of the cultural and creative community. And I think our voice as a team has really solidified, because you decide in these moments what you're going to be. And one of the things that came across our minds is, you know, we are a part of the creative economy. When Dukan started, it was just this idea and no one knew what podcasts were. And even now when we do the, you know, strategic work, people still have, a journey to go with understanding people of the Middle East. But I want to, you know, I know this is a question that our listeners have. What is the creative economy? Because it's being said a lot, but who is a part of the creative economy and why does it matter to anyone?
I think it's a great question. And I think it's about time that we reinforce this narrative, because you know, when we all start talking about it, it's going to reach where in certain, let's say, meeting rooms that were with decision makers, and this is what we're doing right now. At the from a ministerial level and from a federal perspective and a local perspective. So creative economy has been become an important, you know, part of our global economy, not just, you know, as a narrative and also an implementation. Many countries have realized the importance of knowledge-based industries. The UAE, you know, believes in the knowledge-based industries, such as in our field, the culture and creative industries, and how they, you know, how they come asset to create opportunities and to create sustainability for the creative economy. So the United Nations declared 2021 as a year of the International Year of Creative Economy and Sustainable Development, a year even the UAE is proud to support and participate in. So the aim is to promote sustainable and inclusive growth and highlight the role of culture as a vital sector. You know, it's not just fun and happy and, you know, creative people are not organized or not structured and whatsoever. And is this a job? Is this a serious job? You know, we always get those kind of questions. So let's go to the, you know, if the audience are asking about the concept of creative economy. It was first promoted by British writer John Hawkins in 2001. So it's quite new. He used the term to denote 15 activities covering varieties of fields. We begin with arts and it extends to technology. And at the time where Hawkins estimated the volume of this economy, the transaction in various parts of the world exceeds $2 trillion. You know, and we're talking numbers here. I mean, and we're talking numbers and we're not yet talking about the importance of the creative economy as a well-being, as nurturing, as educating, as, you know, you have much way more important, it's just kind of an example of, you know, someone breaks their leg and, you know, goes into a surgery and leaves the hospital, and what matters to him or to her, not the leg, but maybe going back to a studio or listening to a music or being united with their dog, whatever it is, or their loved ones. So that emotional side is more important than any side. And I think in such time and such pandemic, we kind of realize the importance of it. So going back to even with institutions such as the United Nations, so the creative economy appeared in the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development as the first issued in 2008. So this is where it started pushing its way forward in terms of what kind of activities, how can we utilize the creative assets, how can we measure them, how can we protect the talents as well who works on the in such industries. So I think it's from the elements of, if you look into it, the innovation, production, distribution, publishing and promotion, all of that, I mean, creative expressions and how we preserve those cultural heritage is the growth of those industries is also related to economic and social and cultural well-being of a country. So just to, you know, to end that note, cultural economy does matter. Because of many reasons that we mentioned already, it employs large number of people. It contributes to the GDP. So the economic dimension of the creative economy are crucial. It's also social and a cultural importance that is obvious to us. The development of creativity in any nation, it reflects. It reflects of its civilization standing. I mean, this what would reflect the UAE, or any nation, the way we treat our creative and cultural economy. And of course, the heart of it is its talents and its people.
No, I couldn't agree more. So with that, I mean, knowing you're an extremely busy person, how do you stay connected with this culture and creative economy, and how do you remain in the know of what's happening?
I have a beautiful, wonderful force of a team that is handling the sector, the CCI sector. The number doesn't matter. Their work shows that they're working towards making sure that we set the strategy that we're working on. What's the strategy? So let's go just what kind of homework we did before, let's say the end results that we want to achieve by the end of the year. So the team of CCI is a team that is following the directive or that we've been, given by His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid, Vice President, Prime Minister, and how he's very much keen in terms of shifting and changing the narrative of creative and cultural industries. So in 2019, we began to develop a strategy with the team. We held a retreat, and after that retreat, where there are many entities and individuals participating, we got out with a directive from His Highness of how we can prepare a comprehensive national strategy to develop culture and creative industry sector in the UAE. And the ministry is in five stages. The team are working on those five stages. They consist of eight main goals and 40 initiatives throughout. And going back to your question is how do we keep up to date? Is how do we start, with the, let's say, the right measuring stick in the UAE? When we go out there and say, okay, this is the number of, this is the this is the size of the CCI in the UAE. It is, we did find a number, and we saw the number is a serious number, but we're still working on the statistical way of measuring it the right way. And we did highlight this number to the leadership. And due to that, we are now pushing in terms of getting it right, having this kind of a way that is, one, in measuring the CCI in the UAE. We have the Emirate of Abu Dhabi launched it in 2019. You have Dubai launched it a few months ago. So there is a drive. There is an understanding of how can we all measure it and start looking into the aspect of education with our partners in the Ministry of Economy, with our partners in the Ministry of Human Development and Emiratization, because there are many players. There's that interdependency to make it work. It's because that there's this economic element, there's this business setup element, and there's this talent element that we need to look into. So the SMEs and the freelancers, I mean, the gig economy is an important economy, and we need to just push forward and look at how can we enhance our policies. We're currently working in parallel routes in that, and I think... And I hope by the end of 2021, when we will host the World Creative Economy Conference, this is where, going back to Umar, we will look at, the updates, what are we missing here, who are the institutions or individuals who will help us keep abreast and updated in terms of what's next.
No, inshallah. I think it's exciting because also, shout out to your team because they've been doing a wonderful job, even, communicating with them to put and organize this podcast together was such a breeze working with them. And seeing, it's interesting how we see the work being done cross ministries and working together to kind of facilitate and develop this as a larger role in the economy, which is wonderful.
But that's super cool, especially that you mentioned about that you guys, after that summit that you guys have done, and you're coming back with eight goals and 40 initiatives and how you want to take this further. But what if someone that wants to contribute and wants to play a role in the creative economy, what's your advice to them so they can get on the ministry's radar to be part of the initiatives or the goals and supporting this vision?
Well, I think it's reaching out to us, number one. In certain times we do a showcase or publish our activities on Instagram, mostly on Twitter, but Instagram, I think its engagement is higher. I think as well as following with the conference when it's out there, how they can be part of it in any way. The other thing is as well, I think the pandemic helped us to push for the importance of it. And this is where I call the silver lining, because it showed us that it's a sector that is vulnerable. And this is where we decided to say, okay, how can we as a ministry, just look at who is affected, who are the entities or the individuals, freelancers and SMEs, and how we can support them financially. And what I want to highlight is it's the first time ever in the UAE history, cash goes directly to creatives without commissioning of any work. And I think it's the only sector that did that, okay? And I'm so happy. And I think there was a belief and a support from leadership, because we surveyed, we submitted. It was so beautiful because it wasn't just exclusive for Emiratis. It was the creatives of the UAE, full stop. And then there was a second round. And from there, we did capture individuals who we're working with very closely in the future, in terms of what we're doing. We're still looking at how are they doing, and did it help them? Did the relief fund, the creative relief fund, help them in its first cycle or second cycle? We didn't know if it was the right move, but our goal is to keep them afloat, is to keep the business going. If we can, how can we keep it going? And I think reaching out and connecting with us and maybe being part of the conference and attending the conference, registering at the conference as soon as it's there, I think they will get a better and a bigger picture of how are we intending to take this forward. And it starts always with a question, I guess.
Definitely. I think we're lucky to be part of it at the beginning. Your team reached out and were part of the early researches and the statistics, and like being part of that exercise of developing that to support the SMEs when the pandemic first started. So inshallah, we'll be part of it moving forward as well.
Because Omar, your show is a show that, that talks. I mean, there's this conversations about challenges in the creative sector. How can we be better? I mean, issues, cases. And I think that is really helpful. So what you're doing is you're as well, contributing to that. You are part of the creative economy. You are part of CCI in terms of what you do. And you're part of getting this discussion transcends in terms of just, meeting rooms, long meetings, or let's say long voice notes. long voice notes, 1.5x. So I think it's the awareness element, that awareness element, and bringing up those kind of issues are very much helpful in terms of what we're trying to do. So thank you for that.
Thank you for the first thing that I always want to recognize is that for the first time in the history of the country, and obviously in our lifetime, we've seen a support for creatives validating the fact that they exist in an economy and contributors to a true economy. It's not this ideology. There is a pipeline fighting for them. And it's because of the work that you and your team do. And we're really, really grateful. One of the things that I would like to know is, who are the current champions of the creative economy? So are there industries, just like anything, some industries are sort of future thinking, and or that there may be businesses that you're looking at as the future of the creative economy? In your research or in the time, has your team targeted any focal points that they will be focusing on towards the end of 2021?
Of course. I mean, I think the champions are, I mean, number one are the creatives. I mean, they're the number one champions. I mean, because from the creatives, number one, they're the talents, they're the heart of what we're doing. And the ideas are coming from there, the work is coming from the creatives. And their forms of, if they're freelancers or small SMEs or medium to large, whatever it is. So all of the CCIs that, that runs on, all of the genres that runs under the CCI, of course, they're champions. You're having the government as well, institutions. You have the private sector, and you have the community as well. Institutions are important elements. Those are the champions. And I need to stress on individuals who understand CCI, even if they're not in CCI. understand the importance of CCI as the patronage of the CCI of, let's say, someone who's who believes in gaming, okay? And they say, you know what? I think gaming is the next thing. I think, it helps education, and therefore I'm going to give a fund to such games boutique to help develop some games. So those patrons and those investors as well are champions that we're also looking into. And of course, certain investment banks that are helpful. What is interesting as well is you're looking at hubs, creative hubs, such as 2424, Dubai Media City, Art Jameel, Louvre Abu Dhabi, Circal Avenue, and many, many more. The Sharjah Events Biennial, the Sharjah Art Foundation. So you're looking at as well the breadth of other institutions who are as well championing it in a way or another. It's a very long list, and I think it's. But it's just to help suffice that my answer is you know, the moment we're going to get out there and we're going to have this clear policy and strategy, you know, people or players like, let's say, the Ministry of Economy who are helping us in IP protection, we say, okay, these are our champions in IP protection. The Ministry of Education and looking at how it will be embedded in education curricula, getting students ready. These are our champions in education. So I think it's just it's based on each one of them and what they can add into or patron or sponsor.
So a follow-up question. I mean, we know that now we have the sustainable development goals that have been set for the UAE. What are the sectors that are vital to surpassing those goals?
The recent past has seen significant transformation in terms of boosting our economic potential of creative sectors. I think the linkage and in terms of the goals and the linkage between culture and creative industries and sustainable development goals as defined by the United Nations are not straightforward. Although the SDGs do not include a separate goal for cultural sector, the creative sector is crucial for realization of the goals, especially those pertaining the well-being, the education, as mentioned, employment, economic growth, innovation, industry production, and consumption. I think raising the contribution of the CCI and it's, there's this direct link to it to the national and global GDP is actually, I consider it a shortcut to attaining several SDGs, even though it didn't mention the cultural sphere. So I think it's also, a cultural economy needs to be a thriving economy. And for us, we need to, make sure that we guarantee the urban recovery and resilience away from, let's say, possibilities of pollution, carbon footprints, and ecological threats. And I think it's this is where, there is absolutely beyond the SDG goals that we can contribute to.
A question from my side is that, as you know, the creative and culture industries are all community-based, each and every one of them. What do you believe is the main challenges these industries are facing? And what can we, as the Dukan, our audience, do to rise to the challenge and help?
I think the challenge is the tendency to always separate the economic aspect from any discussion and culture. So it's this is an economic aspect, but what does culture has to do with it? We need always to be ready to answer this question. Why is culture is connected to economic contribution? So that needs to change. We need to, so shows, like yours and audience such as yours should appreciate the fact that the industry is not just about as we mentioned, content and art and cinema and it's about livelihood. employment, entrepreneurship, economic growth. And I mean, during the, we're still, of course, COVID is still there, but when, you know, the beginning of the pandemic where, you know, people were just waiting for a YouTube musical or a live performances. And everyone was waiting for that. Everyone was just waiting. I mean, no matter. So, I mean, I hope that will push that cynical kind of term of let's not connect culture and economy. As I mentioned, how can we change the stereotype? But I think Dukan changes the stereotype in that, changes the stereotype of Arabs in media. Shedding light also. I remember in UAE's law and the fields of intellectual property, and please continue doing that, because if we don't hear you, if you don't say it, if you don't raise it, and you know, sometimes we get very much living in our own bubble because we're trying to finish certain projects. And it's good in terms of every now and then to get a constructive nudge from you guys and from others.
Thank you very much. We will, Hadrin, will continue doing what we're doing. And you know, I know you mentioned about the new initiatives and the new goals that you guys are going, that you have come up with, that
will be
said in the conference. Everyone, make sure you attend the conference when it goes live. But
we'll be there.
But what excites you the most about the future, Your Excellency?
I'm very much excited, and I hope my team, for prospect of this immense growth of the creative economy in the UAE. The UAE is a major player when it comes to CCI in the Middle East and North African region, due to many great projects and certain emirates. The sector is ranging from architecture and design and to gaming, to visual arts. I think the UAE's permanent position as an innovation hub helped in that, for a central growth for CCI, and even to make our job easier. The infrastructure is there, the players are there. It's just how to connect the dots and measure it and push for it and put the right strategy and the enabling policy. So we have invested and facilitated in the creation of those creative, let's say, cities that I mentioned just earlier, and the establishment of those institutions. So I think the continuous growth in an immersive, technological, artificial intelligence, etc., will also help the prospect of the CCI, because technology is playing a very strong role in that, and it's part of the CCI as well. And how AI will affect artists and their work in the future. And you know, we're now talking about NFTs, and I don't know, did you buy any NFT? I'm still old fashioned. I need to see it in front of me rather than, or have it, you know, I need to touch it. I still need to touch it.
The bravery of it excites us. And so we actually feel, you know, there is something about the future, but I don't think it's the end all be all, because we cannot lose the tradition of going into a gallery and experiencing the art and seeing brushstrokes in real life. We know that tension is always there for us, but we see the future, and young people understand it. They get it, you know?
I'm still trying to get over the fact that I can't buy a CD. I'm buying it directly through PlayStation. Like, you know, back in the day, you go like, oh, when FIFA الجديد, when FIFA 2017, جيب واحد CD. And you know, there's a PS store. You can't negotiate it. You have to pay this much. There's no habub. I'm going to come next week for the WWE. No.
Well, after the CD, there is the USB and whatsoever. But I think with going to the virtual reality and the NFTs and the hybrid kind of the hybrid experience. So even the conference that we talked about is going to be hybrid. And I think this is the beauty, where there is the audience of the virtual model or the NFTs, and the, you know, and the ones who wants to get the real thing. And I don't know, maybe in 50 years the real thing will be only NFTs. We don't know, you know, what's going to happen. But I think it's just the way the youth, I mean the way they they work themselves around, you know, education, chatting with others, getting to introduce one another, being in another virtual world with new friends that they never met. It's, you know, I think it's normal that they operate differently in such a way and they think differently. And I think our job is, how can we keep ahead or abreast in terms of sort of development or ahead of the game? It's not necessary that I know how to work it out. I think it's, how can I offer it and understand that this is what fits their lifestyle more than mine.
You should meet my 8-year-old niece. She's our consultant.
She's our youth consultant at Kawi's 8, and OT has a 9-year-old brother, and we constantly come to terms with the fact that, you know, their online relationships are equally important and real than our real life. Their negotiation with the online world is equally valid. It has the same dopamine hits. It has the same adrenaline hits. So I get it. And I want to be a part of nurturing that, because artists and the cultural and creative community exist there as well. And we need to be wherever they are.
And I think this is a very interesting kind of maybe a thought-provoking idea of what if we got 9 years old or 10 years old to be our consultants in certain things, because,
yes,
you know, we consultants shouldn't be just the ones who will, you know, send you hundreds of PowerPoint pages with numbers and, you know, pie charts on them. I think those 80s and 9 years old, I mean, we need to ask them those questions in terms of what's next, because I have a 9 years old niece, and I sometimes look at the way she, you know, the shows she watches, the games. I forgot the game she was playing. Graphic-wise, it didn't look nice.
Minecraft. The squares. It's just a bunch of cubes. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm like looking at Minecraft. I'm like, why does it remind me of my Commodore days? I mean, Amiga day. I mean, long time ago. It's the same style. And I thought there would be more evolution because it should, in terms of how it will look like, but it looked to them addictive. Yeah, very interesting. Yes.
You know why? Because it's so simple for them to create on it. Like, I look at my niece and she builds mansions with like springs inside the house, and there's a pool, and I'm like, whoa.
Yes.
This is where her imagination lives. And this is what one of the things we had said before at Dukan. We said we need a consultant from every age era. We need someone in their 10s, in their 20s, in their 30s, in their 40s, and so on, so we can actually do our jobs properly. And so, yeah, we've covered the 10s, but we're moving upwards. And I think that way we have a more wide world view, you know? It's worked for us.
And the beauty about it is that, like, even when we have, like, when I have conversations with my niece, or when we have conversations with Oti's brother, or even when she has a conversation with my niece, it's more of a, like, full-on conversation to understand them. And when she answers you back, and she, like, you have two thoughts in your head. One, you go like, oh my God, wow,
yeah,
you're only 8 or 9. And the second one is like, Allah yistur. Allah yistur, Allah yitawlik ya bit. You know what I mean? Like, oh my God, what is going to happen in like 10 or right. 15 or 20 years when she's like 25? You know what I mean? Or he's 30. And you're like, oof. Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing. Inshallah, we live through to see everything.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It was very funny, because, like, even with my brother, it's like, because he's been, you know, doing his school from home, I would go down and like just sit next to him and watch what he's doing. And if he freaks out, he's like, wait, why are you here? I'm like, no, man, I'm curious. Like, what is this that you're doing? And, you know, so it was Minecraft, and now there's Roblox, which is a new game that is multiple universes within universes like Minecraft that they create and compete in. He plays with his friends via Microsoft Teams, and then he'll switch to watch anime. I'm like, how do you know about anime? And he sits and reads it with the subtitles. Like, he would only watch in Japanese with the subtitles, you know. It's just fascinating how they interact with the world. And then, you know, needs to go out to his to the neighbor's play to play with the neighbor's kid, will get on a skateboard and head out. So like, this online and offline interaction that they're experiencing is very different from ours. They're so native.
I agree. And the multifaceted dimensions of of absorbing information at the same time in different levels. The offline, the screen itself, how many things happening on that screen or how many windows, okay? And then comes interacting with their friends and everyone. So, I think this is where, I mean, for us, we lived in a 2D, you know, 2D days. I mean, the mobile. I mean, for me, okay. I experienced the Nokia when it was just black and white, okay, yep. and the flip mobile, and then the Ericsson days when it was the cage and yes, and then there's the BlackBerry days, and we were just obsessed with the messenger. You know, and this evolution by itself, I mean, we're very much, you know, we adapt. But what right now, you've reached to a point where the mind should have been, it's like the gamers, they think differently, you know. If you're not a gamer, you know, it's the way you're very quick in terms of, observing information or responding or whatever it is. So for them, it's like, gamers, since they're in the age of what, 3 years old with the iPad and knowing what to push and what not to push. I think it's so fascinating, but definitely I wasn't that kid. I mean, we were totally kind of, I don't know, innocent, right? Maybe. So that's the word.
Let's just use innocent.
Yeah. I was like, I'm going with innocent.
Your Excellency, I have a quick question. When you went to the opening of the Italian pavilion, we all three of us, because by the way, like away from all this, all three of us are very infatuated with sneakers and everything. So we looked, we found, and some of your appearances, you're rocking different sneakers. Okay. So tell us a bit about that. Like, do you have like do you have a collection, or it's just a couple? Well, what is it? Are we like? Tell me more.
I have this guilty kind of, pleasures of collecting glasses and shoes, and with sneakers. Yes, I have a problem in terms of where to.
What kind of problem?
You can't see it right now, but he's sitting in a room of sneakers, God. Your Excellency. He's sitting in a den of sneakers.
I don't know if it's a problem, but I think it's the way we love to express ourselves. I think I'm a person who wants to express. I'm not gonna wear a colorful shela or a abaya. You know, I'm pretty dull in those things. But when it comes to the glasses and the shoes, no, it's a kind of a different game. So
we'll film a video of us taking you sneaker shopping. I think that will be amazing.
Would love to. And buying me some
deal.
Yes, of course.
You got it.
Of course.
All right. So speaking about the kids and everything, for Hamoudi, my brother, Akawi's niece, and all the young creative minds, you know, that are growing up today, what advice do you have for them?
So the kids who are in a country like the UAE, this is where, you know, this is where opportunities are they're vast, and information is just is a click of a button. They can, you know, study, or they can know about, as you said, anime, different languages, different games, ideas for their career and an early stage of their lives. Totally different. The pace is totally different than back then. For us, I mean, we needed to graduate from university to know what's going on, and did I major the right major, even that I graduated, am I in the right job? But now you're talking about generation that we're trying, for example, with my Hatzaid University, we're trying to introduce internship in year one, not after 4 years. You need to get it. You need to understand. You need to be responsible from year one. And then when you graduate, well, you have a job guaranteed. And you have experience, because this kind of everything that is, you know, easy, the information, school, whatever it is, you know, it's luckily here, we have it here in the UAE. So I think my advice is, we don't want, we, you know, it's like, okay, so Edward Said, in his book Orientalism in 1978, starts with a question: what one really is. And I think if you ask yourself your question specifically as an Arab, specifically as someone in this region, I think this is a very important question, and you won't get it by, I don't know, a video game or Minecraft. You'll get it by reading. You're going to get it by history. You need to immerse yourself. If you're into science, immerse yourself with the music a little bit, or philosophy. You know, don't be dull. Don't be just, you know. And I know this generation can do more than one major because of the way they function. Yet, I think there has to be a depth. And that depth doesn't come quickly. And I think this is the question we need to ask ourselves. Noura, who you really is? I mean, who are you? And from there, it's the question of my identity, of my history, of my country, of my values, of what I believe in, because that constructs a human being, my philosophy, and my how I accept one another, and how humanity raises above everything. So I think it's maybe the opposite of what they're used to. It's reality is important, because even with pandemic, we most of us went back to basic and are missing basic. Who was blessed with a backyard loved their backyard. Who wasn't blessed with a backyard and an apartment just was, you know, craving even sitting near a green plant. So we went back to basics, and we were in 2020. So go back to basics, read more, ask yourself a question: what one really is. Sorry.
You know what, especially now when you mentioned the thing about the internship from year one, and I'm sure when you guys announce all the initiatives, there's going to be a lot of, like, for me, OT, and you go like, oh, I wish I was young again, or I wish I was back in school, or I wish I was back in university. But, you know, it's also one of the reasons why we do what we do on the Dukan Show and on the Dukan Media, is to also contribute back to this generation. And please, whatever we can do to help support any of the initiatives of the goals through us, through our circle, through anything, please let us know. We'd love to be part, because khalas, we can't live it anymore. Khalas, we're old. Reem's old. OT's old. Anna, I'm the youngest one, so not so much. So I'm good.
What do you mean? Speak for yourself. Speak for yourself. Speak for yourself. But the question, the one thing, Dukan started as trying to help third culture kids find home. But I think the new iteration after our 200th episode given to us by Her Excellency is obviously, who are you? What are you made of? Where do you come from? That's the next evolution of what Dukan should be doing. Because I see it makes sense,
see
right?
That's hashtag into you.
Thank you for that, Your Excellency. Hashtag whomst are you? Whomst even are you?
Because I don't think they ask themselves the question. It's, everything is just very quick and fast, and when we pose and ask ourselves the questions, and I think the easier the question is, the tougher the answer is. So yeah,
I completely agree. I think that's kind of the perfect note to end this conversation with you on. I mean, honestly, Your Excellency, thank you so much for being with us on this milestone episode. I mean, we're celebrating 6 years of, and, you know, for you to celebrate 6 years of Dukan Show with us, it's interesting because, like, when I first began this, you know, I planned out my 1, 3, 5, and even 10-year milestones for the show, and, you know, we hope to achieve, and alhamdulillah, we've managed to achieve most of those milestones. So it's been wonderful. So thank you for being part of this. And once again, thank you to our listeners for being part of this journey with us throughout this entire experience. I mean, it's been an honor and a privilege for us.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. I you know, congratulations on your 6th anniversary. Proud. And I hope to celebrate with you the 12th anniversary. So let's keep going and keep doing what you're doing. Having you and it's so essential in terms of taking what we're doing to the next level. And having this platform is so important. A voice is important. And thank you for providing a voice to, let's say, me, but others as well. So that's not a that's not a small role. That's a very important one. So thank you very much.
Thank you for kicking it with us today. I hope you enjoyed listening to this week's episode as much as we enjoyed creating it for you. Please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast at to stay up to date with all our conversations. Also, if you don't mind, hit us with the 5-star rating, leave a comment, let us know how you feel about the show. That way, it could also help others find the show. And be sure to share it with your friends and family, whoever you think can benefit from it. You can holler at us on all social media platforms at The Can Show. We'd love to hear from you. Or you could drop us an email to hello@thecanmedia.com. Salam.